Merciful Father, help us with our allegiances. Amen. Many people, I believe, that being a Christian is about being kind of doe-eyed and nice to everyone. And in our churches, we expect flattery, don't we, and superficial bump, greetings and mirth and a kind of a sense of wanting people to like us. And in that, possibly like Jesus. There was a time when we couldn't get through meetings because of all the flattery and all the sort of waffle before any point could be made. I think we've moved away from that now. But you, of course, can charm somebody into church. And then we can feel really pleased with ourselves because we can say we have contributed to saving a soul just by being nice. And this sort of gnat-straining technique is as old as the hills. And it's part of a sort of hand-shaking, baby-kissing routine practiced by politicians. But I'm not sure it's something appropriate for clergy or for people in the church. We can see it in our passage today, in our gospel reading. They approach Jesus by flattering in him. It's shameless. The flattery is the kind of norm for the Pharisees and has been such, it seems, for millennia. And then into that china shop comes Jesus. He's got no time for it. It's part of the hypocrisy, the hypocritical behaviour of the Pharisees. Jesus has a way, doesn't he, of discerning people's intent. He can drill down using perception to get the true measure of people, and he does it brilliantly in our passage today. He can see if someone's playing straight or not. Perhaps you have that discernment, I don't know. You get the sense, don't you, at work when somebody is, I won't use the word, but when somebody's trying it on or giving you a load of spiel. I know as a teacher, the kids haven't done their homework, however much they might answer the questions. You just know it. So this story is this perfect example. Jesus perceives through the questions and the waffle and the flattery that his accusers have really been sent to catch him out. They're trapdooring him and they're trying to incite Jesus to give him answers that they hoped would lead to some kind of systematic incendiary consequences. Fortunately, Jesus was one step ahead and could read exactly their intent and give them the answer that floored them, left them absolutely speechless, and a begrudging respect for this Nazarene northerner, Jesus the carpenter, who they could do absolutely nothing to stop him other than kill him outright, which we know they eventually did. And so being nice to people, well, you know, St. Paul cuts no bones about that either. His language, particularly if you read it in the NIV, is equally bruising, if not downright offensive. In our readings today, he likens the temple teachers as dogs, evildoers, mutilators of the flesh. Strong language. You know, if St. Paul wrote such stuff on a public media today, he may be put on the prevent register for extremism or hate speech. Jesus was the same. He called the Pharisees sons and daughters of hell. That's strong words for the clergy of the day. Even the psalmist is a little different. Psalm 58. Break the teeth in their mouth, O God. Tear out the fangs of those lions. Let them vanish like water that flows away. When they draw the bow, let their arrows fall short. May they be like a slug that melts away as it moves along, like a stillborn child that never sees the sun. Psalm 58, that's our prayer. That's my prayer for people who make war, councils who think it's a good idea to drop missiles on hospitals. Let break the teeth in their mouth, what the psalmist says. Let us remember that Jesus cursed the fig tree on the way into Jerusalem for not bearing fruit. And when the disciples left Jerusalem later, they saw that same fig tree withered and shriveled. The fig tree, of course, being a symbolic of the holy tradition of the temple priesthood. St. Paul, Jesus, the psalmist, Isaiah, they all of them use harsh words to describe wickedness and evil. They are very aware of the battle they are involved in. But we can be encouraged because they may use harsh words, but their intent is of love. Jesus does use harsh words, but he's motivated entirely through love. St. Paul reminds us in Hebrews that God will chastise and break the children he loves. Hebrews 12, verse 6, for the Lord disciplines the one that he loves. And then in Isaiah 42, a bruised reed he will not break, a smouldering wick he will not snuff out. He might make your life tough for you, but in faithfulness he will bring forth his justice. Isaiah 42. It's one of those kind of fridge passages. And last of all, let's just talk about the M word. Money, bread, moolah, green, you know, the green juice, sobs, jar of honey, whatever you want to describe money. You know, Jesus talks more about money than anything else in the Gospels. The wallet is the closest object to a person's heart, one Christian banker once said. This gospel story leaves us with a very simple reminder in the form of a question. Who is your God? The fundamental issue raised by this biblical passage is that of allegiance. You may think that you own the deeds of your property, the keys to your car, the front door of your house. You may think that what or not is in your bank account is entirely yours. But the reality is that God owns it all. And he tolerates, through boundless generosities, his gifts for us all. Not just to have and enjoy, but to share. The face on the coin will die, and the coin with them. We are in the process of changing the face on our national currency to that of Charles. But Charles knows, as indeed his mother did, that even as a monarch, with their wealth and power, they will not live forever, and they can take nothing of their wealth, power, or status with them when they die. Everything we own belongs to God and he alone. Yet we live in a life in which competing powers and influences vie to own us and capture our hearts. The tendency, for example, for what we own to own us instead, and what we own to exert ownership on us. But God says you cannot serve both money and God. So let us be careful. Let us show directness and clarity in being the people of discernment, the people who understand intent. So as we leave here today, take that question with you. What and who is trying to own me? Because we need to guard the greatest wealth, the greatest treasure we possess, which is our faith and calling and loyalty to God above all else. Even if that does mean times of discomfort, challenge, or divinely driven suffering, chastisement. But all that is nothing, as St. Paul says, because we have and we should safeguard our loyalty to God, render unto him in service, justice, and faith. Amen.